Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.
Welcome to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca, and I'm a Bengals fan for life. All right, this episode is going to be a review of the Steelers game and a preview of the upcoming Chargers game. Sans is going to stop in with his expert analysis, and we're also going to welcome in special guest Alex Finelli, an NFL expert and a big-time Chargers fan. And on top of that, we're going to have a special treat for you. Justin Lacey and Tom McLevy are going to stop in with their own monologues on the Bengals, the Bearcats, and this huge win over Pittsburgh.
What's up, Bengal Nation? This is Adrian the Mad Backer Ross, and you're listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. Hooday!
Week 12 review. Cincinnati Bengals, 41. Pittsburgh Steelers, 10.
There's only one thing that I like better than a Bengals victory. It's a Bengals blowout victory over the rival Steelers. This team is unified. It's hungry. It's clicking on all cylinders. The Browns are in a little bit of trouble right now with Mayfield hurt. The Ravens are a little bit up and down. The Steelers, we know Ben is pretty much done. It is our time right now to take this division. You see the fight in this team. No one wants to tackle Joe Mixon. You have guys like Chase and Boyd and Higgins blocking downfield. The offensive line giving it their all. The defensive line going crazy, stopping the other team. Joe Burrow getting into a fight with TJ Watt and holding his own. I know he got thrown to the ground, but he brought Watt down with him. Nothing is going to stop us right now. I'm standing behind that. Nothing is going to stop this team right now. Let's go. We have 4 of 6 games at home. And if you think about it, for the rest of the regular season, we only have one game outside of Ohio, and that's when we go to Denver. Yeah, that's going to be a tough game. But the other 5, they're all either home or in the state of Ohio. And if we keep playing like this, we're going to host a playoff game or two. All right, so let's go over some observations from the game. So first off, I love the orange jerseys with the black pants. You know, I'm always a fan of the black on black, but man, that orange with the black pants looked dynamite. We looked really cool, and we showed it on the field. You know, sometimes when you have that right outfit on, you just have that confidence. You know, even in our own lives, you know, when you're wearing your coolest clothes, you shine a little bit more. And the Bengals certainly shined this past Sunday. Another observation from the game, it was great not to see the Steeler fans all over the TV and yelling Freiermuth and cheering and heckling us on 3rd and 4th down because there's so many Steeler fans in there. You know, I guess there were their share of fans in the audience, but you saw mostly Bengal fans on the TV broadcast, and those Steeler fans were real quiet. I didn't see any towels waving. I didn't hear any cheering because we put them to sleep right away. The officiating was good. I would have liked to have seen a flag on the Burrow-Watt fight, but in all reality, Burrow was kind of fighting back. You know, it was right in front of the ref. If he really felt it was a penalty, he would have called it. But aside from that, it wasn't a flag-happy officiating crew, and that makes for a good game. I was watching one of the games on Thanksgiving, or the other night, it was the Dallas game, and there was like almost 30 penalties in the game. You couldn't even sit through the game without penalties. It wasn't even fun to watch. It was like the refs wanted their TV time. Really horrible officiating. I know when guys bend the rules, you have to throw the flag, but there's also a little bit of restraint. And the refs from this game showed some restraint. They let the guys play. They let the plays downfield transpire and the defensive backs and wide receivers fight it out. They weren't going crazy throwing the flags, and that makes for a much more interesting football game to watch. And Mixon established his dominance right away. First series, 50 yards in the first series alone. And just right off the bat, that first pass to him, and then that first run to him, it was like, they're not going to stop this guy. And it just set the tone. Within the first 2 minutes of having the ball, it was just like, lights out. You are not going to stop this offense, and you're not going to stop this man today. I thought we could have spelled Mixon a little bit more with Perine in the beginning. I know later in the game they pulled Joe, and they gave Evans and Perine some carries, which is good. But over the course of the game, Mixon runs so hard, and he's so willing to take on contact, a lot of blocking in the backfield. That's just a lot of, you know, they say when you run the ball up the middle or into a crowd in the NFL, it's almost like a car accident. And he took the ball 28 times on the ground and a few times in the air. That's a lot of touches. That's a lot of car accidents for a human body. So I was like, you know what, man, let's preserve him. I know he was the bell cow. He was carrying the team, and he didn't want to come out for any reason at all. I understand that. But you want to keep him healthy too. So there's no complaints here. It was a great performance, but let's just be a little conscious of his long-term future. You don't want to blow him out in one blowout against the Steelers. And then the run game, clicking on all cylinders, the blocking. I'm going to go into the individual performances blocking in a little bit. But we're doing it all in the run game. You're seeing us run up the middle. You're seeing us run off tackle. You're seeing sweeps around the edge. There was a couple draws. It was just totally using every aspect of the running game. And obviously it worked. It controlled the clock. It frustrated the defense. It kept that Steelers defense on the field way too long. And then on the converse, we destroyed the run game. Again, I'm not a big fan of Najee Harris yet. And what, that offensive line is decimated enough. They had B.J. Finney in there. We struggled as an offensive line last year. And we had Finney on the roster. He never even saw the field. And here the Steelers were starting him against Ogunjobi and Reader. Good luck. And then a big part of the game, inside of 2 minutes, you want to score in that two-minute drill. Joe throws the interception, forces it in there. I'll go over that a little bit later. And then, you know, he gets into the little brawl with TJ Watt. Spain came over and cracked Watt, if you saw that on the replay. It was nice to see someone come into Burrow's defense. And the camera kept showing him all upset on the sidelines. I was loving it. But anyway, back to that inside the 2 minutes. So we throw the interception, looking like the Steelers are going to gain some momentum. And then what do? Mike Hilton, pick six, score at the 30-second mark. That's enough to bury a team right there, especially when you were up 24-3. And the game was over at halftime, 31-3. I don't know. There's been some comebacks from that deficit in the NFL. But when you think about 31-3, you have to score four touchdowns just to tie the game. And you have to stop the other team four or five times just to tie the game. And it was a team that you showed that you couldn't stop in the first half. And what happens when you're up 31-3? Steelers get the ball. All of a sudden, your playbook is almost cut in half. You can't do any tricky runs. You're going to just run the ball occasionally just to say we're not going to throw every down. But that really slices your playbook down, and that's what the Steelers were looking at in the third quarter. So here you go. You're getting blown out. The run game is going to be a non-factor anymore because you want to save clock. You have a quarterback who can't get the ball down the field. I mean, it's such a limited bag of plays for them to work with in that third quarter. We came out in the second half and stayed aggressive. We didn't just run the ball. We put the ball in the air, but we were still conscious of draining the clock. You know, Joe was taking it inside of 5 seconds on every snap. There was a bunch of runs to Mixon, but we didn't just say we're going to run it every time. So I'm glad to see that they still remained aggressive and said, we're not letting you back in. We're not just going to play clock control and let you creep back in within a score or two. And that was one of the halftime adjustments, I imagine. They were like, you know what? Let's drain the clock on these guys, but let's not be too predictable. So I always like to go over the first series of the second half, as you guys know, and this is what they did. We come out of the locker room, and we're saying that Mixon is the most aggressive hot hand right now of any player on the field. So what do? First play, Mixon left for 9 yards. It was working left all day. Yeah, all right, we're going to run away from Watt a little bit. Run into that left side after, you know, with Spain and Jonah in front and the wide receivers blocking. Just totally working all day. So we come out, run left for 9, then Mixon up the middle. It was to the right side of the middle, basically up the middle for 4 yards. And then we try the sweep with Mixon left. So when you think about it, they do an off-tackle left. They do, you know, an up-the-middle blast, whatever you want to call it, right. And then they do another sweep left. And it got -2, but they came out of the locker room saying, we're going to keep feeding Mixon, we're going to keep running the clock, and we're going to keep being dynamic in the play calling. So even though it was 3 runs, it was 3 totally different runs. And then we tried the tight end screen to Uzama, which is something that I thought we should have been doing more in that game. So, you know, a good time to bust it out. Maybe if you rode it too much in the first half, it wouldn't have been effective later. So they decided to bust it out, I believe, for the first time. And Uzama got -4 on it. So it didn't work. You know, that's how it goes. And then the fifth play, Mixon, there was a bunch of receivers out there, and I think everyone was covered. Joe checks it down to Mixon. He does a little in route, gets 0 yards. So first series, not as effective as we would have liked, not as effective as we've have been doing all year, but it was feed Mixon, drain the clock, be a little creative while you're still draining the clock, and ended up in a punt. And then you move on in the game. 13 minutes left in the game, we're winning 41-3. Then they pull all the starters. Smart move. Keep everyone healthy. Let the backups get reps. The backups played decently against the Steelers as well, too. So you know what? Not a bad idea on all parts to protect your guys and let some of the backup guys get some experience in one of those AFC North battles. And I do like the fact that, you know, Phillips got his helmet ripped off. He wanted to go after Claypool. Another dirty Steeler player. Claypool's a big man, a lot bigger than Phillips, and Phillips had no fear. He was going at him almost like the guy that was going after LeBron James after that elbow, you know, almost with the same ferocity. And the sideline holds him back, and it was good. They stopped a penalty. Phillips had no helmet. You know, it's hard to fight a guy with a helmet when you don't have a helmet. So they kind of protected him from himself, and they probably saved him a little bit of money, too, from getting fined. So he should be taking those guys out to dinner. And I'm glad nothing escalated from there. Claypool got his payback early. He had a couple drop passes, and Bates just absolutely rocked him. And then the last observation from this is Coach Tomlin. And I don't know. I can go off on my dislike and disrespect for Coach Tomlin, and he's another one. Everyone loves him. He's a respected coach, very successful coach, in all reality, a very good coach. But man, he's got a bad track record that if that happened with other coaches, they'd be run out of the league. You guys have to remember him tripping the one guy on the kick return years ago. There was also like a bounty gate against the Steelers maybe 2 years ago, but that just got swept under the rug. You know, nothing ever came of it, but you know it was true. We go back to that 2015 playoff game, rough one to think about. He gives the game ball to Joey Porter, a coach, for running on the field and causing a fight with Adam Jones to get a penalty. You know, it's stuff like that. That's not being a respectable coach. Would Paul Brown have done any of those things? So it continues this game. You know, you could see Tomlin sulking behind the sunglasses, just acting like, yeah, I'm going to yell at my guys after this one. You know, I'm upset right now. And it was unprofessional because he's calling timeouts late in the game. He's leaving Ben in there with Ben's elbow is hanging off after that Hendrickson hit. He was done. You know, I'm surprised he even came back into the game. And there you see Tomlin just keeping him in all the way till the end, calling timeouts to extend the game. You're going to get people hurt that way. Just a really unprofessional performance out of Coach Tomlin. And I'm glad you got what you deserve because you guys are not making the playoffs. All right, so let's go over some key plays from the game. The first key play was really the whole first drive, just coming out, exerting your dominance, getting Mixon going, draining half the first quarter on that drive, and then Joe Burrow with the rush around the end, getting past Highsmith, juking Minka Fitzpatrick. Beautiful diving touchdown in the end zone, just set the tone. Once that happened, I was like, we're not losing this game. So really, that whole first drive was a key play in essence. The next big thing was the Apple interception. So right after that, the Steelers are coming downfield. What they do is they set up trips with a tight end in front. So that's three guys to the right side of the formation. And normally when you do that, you like to see one of the inside guys go outside. But they just had Claypool on the outside, and he stayed on the outside and ran an out and up. I didn't think that was a creative call by Coach Canada. And you know what? I'll take it. You're going to make bad play calls like that? That's fine. What happens? You could say it was a miscommunication, but I don't think it was. I think Ben just threw it behind him. I think Ben just was off target and missed him. And Apple makes that great catch across his body and just storms the other way. You're thinking he's going for a pick six. I have to give the Steelers credit. You know I don't want to, but I have to. There were seven Steelers, I counted, that forced their way downfield and pursued and made sure he didn't get in the end zone. So, you know, as much as I hate to say it, that was good coaching. That was good hustle. And they prevented a touchdown. And ultimately, we got a field goal to go up 10-0. So that was a four-point swing just by those guys hustling after the interception. But I'm not going to give them credit. I'm giving Eli Apple the credit on that one. And Ben, where are you throwing the ball, man? Third big play, Higgins with the 32-yard touchdown reception to go up 17-3. All it was he was outside. You know they're favoring Chase a little bit. You know they're cheating up because they think Mixon is going to be going just like he had been all the way up to that point. So what do you get? You get Higgins one-on-one on the outside. Send him upfield on a go route. What does Joe do? Steps into the throw beautifully, 45 yards in the air on a dime, back shoulder, jump ball, but not really a total 50-50 because he put it to the side of Higgins. The defender would have had to make a great play to break that up, and obviously he couldn't do it. And there goes Higgins, you know, 6'4", and then jumping up in the air, you know, he's high-pointing that ball with pads on at probably a little over 11 feet in the air. It's like an NBA rebound. Sometimes you see guys pulling the ball down in traffic, and you get so amazed that they can pull it down. But when you think about the NBA, those guys do that too with those rebounds. 10.5, 11.5 feet in the air and grabbing it amongst a lot of really strong, tall, athletic people. And that's what Higgins did. He blew him away on the one-on-one coverage. We go up 17-3. I mean, just knockout punch after knockout punch. All right, fourth big play. Mixon almost scoring the touchdown where they ruled him down inside the one-yard line, and we eventually went up going 24-3. Very creative idea there. We have trips left now, so three wide receivers on the left side of the formation, and we pitched it out to the left side. So it was just like, let's get a whole bunch of bodies in there. Let's create a whole bunch of congestion in there and let Mixon work his way through it. And that's exactly what he did with the vision, the speed, the acceleration, just weaving his way in and out of bodies. Boyd threw down a defensive back, just great, selfless, tough blocking on the outside. And then you get Spain and Williams upfield giving a block. I mean, just a perfect team play. It was just like a jailbreak. It was like, we have everyone on that side. We know you're loading up that side. And we're going to run to that side. And let's go mano a mano and see who comes out on top. And there it was, 24-3, right after that play. And then the last big play I wanted to highlight, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, was the Hilton interception before the half. So it was an answer to the TJ Watt-Burrow fight. Hendrickson had a nice pressure. It was a little bit of pressure and a little bit of bend not being able to throw. There was no velocity on that throw. You know, you're trying to throw that pass to the sideline with nothing on it. It's just a recipe for disaster if you don't have the arm anymore. So Hilton reads it, makes a great catch, and just takes off and goes, no one catching him. All right, so let's quickly go over some individual performances. So Joe Burrow, biggest quote from Joe Burrow on the day was this: "We have higher aspirations than beating the Steelers right now." So he gets the rushing TD, fakes out Minka Fitzpatrick, as we know. When asked about the touchdown, Burrow said he saw something, and he said the knee feels great, so that's what we all want to hear as Bengal fans. Excellent play by him. In the whole game, he had great pocket movement. He got sacked a couple times, but for the most part, he was getting himself out of trouble. He was rolling out when he needed to. Just very good movement in the pocket and out of the pocket, and it's nice to see that that knee is just getting better and better every week. Wait till he's a year or two removed from it. He's just going to be even more lights out, but right now, his movement is outstanding. 20 of 24 passing, and that's good. Only need to throw 24 times to take out the Steelers, and you're so accurate that you only missed 4 passes on the day. You know, an underrated, great, great, accurate performance throwing the ball as well by Joe Burrow. I always go over the same things about him, you know, his reading defenses, his velocity, his accuracy, fitting the ball into tight windows, etc., etc. But again, he was accurate as usual. That one really sharp slant to Higgins in the middle of the field early in the game between 5 Steelers, when he threw it, I was like, oh, Joe, what are you doing? And it was just a dime, a frozen rope, as I like to say, right in the middle of everyone on the defense. Great catch in traffic. And you have to have a lot of confidence in yourself and in your arm and in your decision-making and in your receiver to make that throw. Then he has the one, it's on the right sideline. It was a 3rd and 12, you know, looking like, hey, tough first down to get. We might be punting here. And he throws that deep out to Higgins. And a couple things. The deep out, anyone who's ever played quarterback, a deep out is really hard to throw. And this one, it wasn't even this high velocity pass. Those are the hardest ones to throw. But what does Joe do? And another one of my favorite type of throws. He just kind of floats it in over that first level of the defense and just before the second level. Or technically, it was the 2nd and the 3rd level, right? You got your defensive line in the front. You have your coverage corners as like level two linebackers, and then level three is your safety or anyone, you know, playing a deep zone. And he just floated it in over level two, in front of level three. Those are the most gratifying throws. It was a big moment in the game. It was a big first down. Higgins high points the ball, barely gets his feet in bounds. The margin of error for that throw is so slim. And then another accurate throw, if you want to go back and rewatch the game, was when Higgins almost had the touchdown and they ruled him just short. That was just a really nice throw on a slant. As I say all the time, we could go through all 20 throws, and I'm sure most of them have some really noteworthy aspects to it. But those were three throws in particular that just showed how much this guy's shining right now and how on his game he is. Now, moving forward, I want Joe to be a little more careful on the passes to the flat, because we had the interception against the Bears that hurt. We had the interception against the Jets that really hurt. And then we almost had the pick here too, but Mixon comes up and hustles and takes the ball away from Highsmith. But those are three plays where Joe's throwing to his left, and it's a horizontal throw. It's not a vertical throw. And it seems like, I don't know, if you were to scout Burrow and say what are some of his weaknesses, I can't really count too many. But I'm going to say it seems like he does better with his vertical throwing than his horizontal throwing, especially when he's going to the left side. So that's something that either we want to coach and practice and fix, or we want to stay away from, because that's really one of the only weaknesses I'm seeing, and teams are going to be keying on that. And this one almost burned us, but it didn't. Just something to think about moving forward. And if the Chargers or Niners or anyone else are listening to this broadcast, don't tell your defensive coordinators this, because I don't want to give any tells on my man. So one interception, and what happened? Adeniji misses the stunt, and I'm not going to get on Adeniji. I think he had a great game, and I think he's doing pretty well. Sands is going to talk about him later on how well he thinks he's doing as an offensive lineman this year. So I'm not trying to just single him out for one bad play. But he did miss the stunt, and it caused Joe to rush the throw a little bit and a higher release. He released it a little bit higher because he had to get rid of it early. You know, kind of a jump ball up there, and we came out on the wrong end of that. So that was the real, if you want the breakdown of that interception. And it always seems like I'm trying to make excuses for Joe Burrow, and maybe I am. But in this case, it was a little bit of pressure, got rid of it a little too early, and that was his one interception on the day. All right, moving on to the star of the game, Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is a true tough guy, and he's got good size, and he's strong, and just he's a punishing runner. The effort that he puts in, and as I said in the last episode, some people are just natural running backs. The vision, you see that he's seeing the field. It's slowing down for him, almost like it slows down for quarterbacks. He's getting that same thing. I know he's been in the league for a few years, but you could just see things are really moving at a pace where he can just pick what he wants to do, and he's doing it. Continues to change speeds effectively, continues to hit it at the right time, continues to be shifty when he needs to, or just gritty and powerful when he needs to. So that whole mix. So yeah, first drive, he has 50 yards, so it already set the tone for the day. He goes on, 165 on the ground, another multi-touchdown game, continues to show great hands. He had that one pass that Burrow threw him out of the backfield that wasn't that accurate, still able to grab it. Hustle, as we said, taking the ball away from Highsmith, avoiding an interception. And then another big play. You don't like to see running backs reverse field too much. There's very few guys that can do it effectively. Well, he had the one play where he's going to the left, nothing was there. He bounces it back right. You're hoping nothing goes wrong here because he's going cross field. And he's got Jamar Chase in front of him. Here you go. You know, all-world wide receiver. Another guy heading to the Pro Bowl and who knows where from there. And there he is. You see Chase just hungry to be blocking someone. And he nails Fitzpatrick and knocks him back like 5-6 steps. Yeah, he didn't knock him down, but he blew him off the ball. Mixon, 32-yard run at the end of the third quarter. Just another really statement play from him. And I can't say enough about how well this player is playing right now. And then P. Ryan got his work. Always reliable, always doing his job. Chris Evans converted a big first down. It was a first down catch in the first quarter, so it wasn't like junk time. He had a nice catch where we kind of needed to convert early in the game, and he was right there. Again, the more they involve Chris Evans, the more you're going to see him shine. And he got some quality carries at the end of the game. And what I liked, it was almost Patriot-like for our part. You saw Brandon Allen take a slide rather than run out of bounds to run out the clock. And there's Evans, a rookie running back, 14-yard gain to the right side. You know, he could have pressed it, maybe got 17 yards and ran out of bounds. What does he do? He slides to run out the clock. Really excited about the future for Chris Evans. Just watch. All right, on to the wide receivers. Just such an unselfish group. It's like a different guy shines every game, and none of the other guys care. No one's sulking. No one's saying, where are my catches? Where are my touchdowns? Where are my numbers? They're just contributing to winning, and you see that in the blocking. I saw Higgins blocking multiple times. You see Chase ready to headhunt anyone who gets in his way. You see Boyd knocking people down on the ground. Mike Thomas, just the whole receiving core, the blocking is just so selfless and unifying for a team. It's just so exciting to see, regardless if they're putting up big fantasy numbers or if, you know, if Chase has slowed down over the last few weeks, whatever you want to say, those guys are directly contributing to wins by being team players. So Higgins made all the catches, what, 114 yards or so, was killing guys in one-on-one, high-pointing the ball, just anything you needed him to do. He was doing this game, and it was a nice breakout game for him. I want to see him continue to be this hot down the stretch. Ja'Marr Chase, productive plays, had 39 yards on the day, but a couple nice first downs, superstar. He's a football player. He's not a diva. Wide receivers can be divas. This guy is a football player. He wants contact. He wants to get dirty. He wants to hit people out there. He wants to contribute to wins. It's not just like, yeah, throw me a 50-yard pass up top and let me look good and have the camera shine on me. Nah, he's putting in the work, and that's what you need. We have so many guys like that are just putting in the work. It's going to be good results. And Tyler Boyd, again, on top of the great blocking, he made some really good contested catches for first downs. Continues to be a security blanket for Joe Burrow, as Joe Burrow said himself. Tight ends did a nice job blocking the whole game. A couple good Uzama catches when needed, so they continue to play at a very strong level. You know, you don't have Pitts out there and Kittle and guys lighting it up like that, but Uzama has done his damage this year on tough routes and making good catches. So tight ends, they get a high grade in my book for this game as well. The offensive line was outstanding run blocking and pretty good in pass protection too. Reef hurt his ankle. I'm wondering if he hurt his ankle on that low block penalty by the Steelers. I'm not sure if that was the play, but it was shortly after that he came out of the game. I hope he's all right to go for the next few weeks. We're definitely going to need him. But Prince came in and played pretty well in his absence, so that was good to see him come in against a divisional rival and play that well and show that the NFL's not too big for him. Hopkins hurt his knee. It looked ugly. And he came out shortly after that, too. I don't know the injury report on him as of this recording, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was questionable to doubtful going into next week. And, you know, he has struggled coming back from that knee injury. It wasn't fun to see that knee get extended like that. But he held up against Hayward for a lot of the day, and he made some very good blocks. I hope he's okay. If not, Trey Hill, it's your time. It's your time. We're going to need you out there playing at a high level. This is a team that's in big contention, so there's no time for a rookie learning curve now. And I think with Coach Pollack, you're going to be all right. He's going to make sure that you're ready to play. Jonah had a great game. He had one little mistake early, as he's been having, but he settled down and had a very big plus game, you know, hustling downfield, making blocks downfield, keeping Highsmith off of Burrow. Just a great game out of Jonah. Great to see. Quentin Spain, another great game. Glad that he stuck up for Burrow and nailed Watt. On top of that, he held his own in pass protection, getting to the second level in the run game, continues to shine. So the two sacks that happened, the first one, Mixon got beat by the edge rusher. It wasn't Watt. I don't know who it was. It was one of the other guys. What happened was, by Mixon kind of missing that block, it forced Joe Burrow up into the pocket, and the left side was kind of collapsing. We took a big loss on the play, unfortunately. Sack number two was a missed blitz pickup on Bush. I don't know who was supposed to get him. It was kind of a delayed blitz, and Mixon had already gone out of the backfield and was in a one-on-one against Schobert in the open field. If Joe would have been able to get Mixon the ball, that would have been a massive gain. But unfortunately, Bush got in there quickly, the pocket collapsed, and there was sack number two. On to the unsung heroes of the team. As always, this defensive line. Reeder and Ogunjobi totally clogged the middle, prevented any run game from happening, pushed the pocket, just totally doing their job. There was one play where Reader hustled like 15 yards downfield to make a backside tackle, and I was like, is that Reader? Like, I just saw him on the ground, and then he gets up, it's number 98. I'm like, he went that far to tackle someone downfield? And another guy we better see in the Pro Bowl, Trey Hendrickson. He is an absolute maniac on that field, a disruptor. He's got good speed for his size and just a strong, tenacious defender. And he slammed, Ben. When you go to throw a ball, you know, think of the torque that you're putting behind that ball to get it out quick and to get it downfield and to thread it in between defenders. That's a lot of torque on your arm. And Hendrickson just stopped his arm as it was going forward. You could just, that was a reconstructed elbow. You could just see something went wrong on Ben on that play. Of course, Coach Tomlin keeps him in the game after that. Hey, that's your problem, not ours. But man, Hendrickson just crushed him. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ben on the injury report next week after a hit like that. It's just, that's the last thing you want to do when you're throwing the ball is have your arm get stopped mid-motion. And Hubbard continues to play so solidly. He got another sack on a big third down in the third quarter. He's the first guy on the fumble recovery when Hendrickson causes it. Glad to see him on the winning end of another excellent play. And the rotational guys are productive. Sample is active. Kareem is hustling all over the field. There's almost no drop-off when he goes in there at defensive tackle. BJ Hill with another big sack. They're putting in a lot of guys to spell these four superstar starters. And these rotational guys are just stepping up. There's like no drop-off. Linebackers, Wilson was rangy and physical. He had another good game. Glad to see he's on the right track again. And I liked, after the one play, Deontay Johnson and Claypool were kind of trash-talking him. And Wilson just looked ahead and laughed. And I liked it. It was like he could have engaged. I'm sure he's stronger and tougher than both of those wide receivers if you really wanted to break it down. But it was almost scarier to someone. You know, when you're going to confront someone and they're just so at ease. And that's what I felt when he did that. He's just walking back to the defensive huddle, just like laughing, like, yeah, give your talk. Just if you want to see me, you know where to find me kind of thing. Just an excellent statement. He's playing so tough this year. Exactly what I was rooting for him. After the rookie year, I was hoping he got stronger and tougher. And there it is. It's right here. Second-year player with the whole world right in front of him. And Wilson tackled well. Pratt tackled well. Bailey tackled well when he was in there. And it was nice to see Marcus Bailey wearing the headset too. You know, you never know down the road. It's a long season. It's a physical division. Cold weather. Playoffs. You never know when we're going to be leaning on Marcus Bailey to make some calls and make some plays in the middle, and he got some good experience at that this game as well. All right, defensive backs, Hilton sealed the game. He actually got to do the Deion high step as he's going to the end zone, so a great moment for him. Very happy for him. If you listen to any interviews with Mike Hilton, he's a very likable guy, and he's a very big team player. And that, again, I said it earlier, that was poetic justice and just a great moment for a great player and a great guy. Eli Apple continues to play well over the last few weeks. He had that big interception. He was physical with Claypool. I know he let up a pass or two, a long pass, but he was right there in coverage. You're not going to stop good wide receivers on every play. And that's Coach Livingston and that whole defensive backfield. You know, he's playing with a lot of good players and some good coaching. And Coach Anarumo is a defensive backs guy. I've said it a million times. So maybe it's all coming together, and maybe Eli Apple's found a home. You know, it's week to week, right? If he goes next week and Mike Williams blows him away for three touchdowns, I guess we're all going to be upset with him. But right now, you deserve it. We're riding high with you, Eli. Keep it going, man. Awuzie, another outstanding game, just locked down. He let up a couple passes, but every pass he lets up is, like, highly contested. Excellent pickup. And, you know, with him playing the way he's playing, if Apple and the other side is solidified, again, very hard to throw against this defense. Bates all over the field, the big hit on Claypool. I thought he broke his ribs on that. It prevented a first down in the two-minute drill and forced a punt, so a huge play in the game inside of 2 minutes. And then you had Phillips and Flowers come in. We were a little more prevent at that time, so they let up some plays. I like the size of Flowers. He's got good length, and he's not really skinny either, so that's... It looks like he has the body to really compete out there. You know, when I saw him let up a few passes, I'm like, all right, maybe that's why he's on the waiver wire. But it's tough to tell. It was a semi-prevent at the time. It was getting late in the game. You know, I want to see more out of him, but I'm encouraged by his physical attributes, at least to this point. So let's see what we have there. And then lastly, onto special teams. McPherson, just total cool, total calm, controlling that heart rate, nailing another 51-yarder. I think he needs like three more to tie the rookie 50-yard record, you know, whatever. But I don't care what he does. I'm just keep kicking like that, and you're just a big weapon for this team. He's making 50-yarders look like 30-yarders, and we've never had that. We've had some decent kickers in our day. You know, you can go back to Pelfrey. Graham had some good years. Obviously, Jim Breach back in the day. Nugent even performed for us at times for most of his career. I'm not going to diss on him, but this guy is the best. Like, it's like Burrow. You have this history of guys that are pretty good, but you got the one right now, and I think you have Burrow's like that, and I think McPherson's like that, and I think Ja'Marr Chase is heading in that direction too. And then Phillips was reliable catching the ball in the return game, so I can't complain about that. And he did have one good return, and it's seeming like every game he seems to bust one for a decent amount of yardage. I'm looking for him to really bust one this year. And let's try to make that return game a little more of a weapon as the season goes on. In the postseason, that can really break a team. I remember there was one year, it was the Bears against the Colts in the Super Bowl, and Devin Hester returns the opening kick for a touchdown. Although the Colts went on to win the game with Peyton Manning, it put him in a hole early. So, you know, with Brandon Wilson not being in there with the threat that he is, I want to see Darius Phillips, if he's going to be our guy and they're not going to bring up Puka Williams or Trenton Irwin or try anyone else, and they're going to give that job to Phillips, let's hope we get some return on our investment there.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast would like to welcome Justin Lacey.
Bengals fans, guess what? We're 7-4, coming off of a big-time win, a big-time statement win. Demolition of the Pittsburgh Steelers, our most hated rival. Feels good, don't it? Feels really good. I know it feels good. But guess what? I hear a lot of different takes and talks about people saying that this was a changing of the guard game. I want to remind you, fans, this was never about a changing of the guard game. Because the changing of the guard game happened last year on Monday Night Football when we took it to them when we had our third-string quarterback. And we sent the statement to them then. And then we decided to follow up that exact same statement when this past week three with a 24-10 win up there in Heinz Field. What I do want to emphasize to the Bengals fans is that this was not a changing of the guard. That already happened. This is the changing of the philosophy. Let's elevate our minds. We've always wanted to see this kind of dominating win against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was so great to witness. But just like our quarterback said in his press conference after the game, our aspirations are bigger than just beating the Steelers. We're glad to be 2-0 against them this year. But moving on to the Chargers now. We got a high for our young quarterback coming into Paul Brown Stadium. And it's time to take it to him. This is going to be the first Herbert versus Burrow matchup, and I'm so glad to see this coming into Paul Brown Stadium. And I cannot wait to see what type of an aerial attack that we're going to be on display. Maybe it's going to come from us. It's going to come from them. I can't wait to see this battle head on. We may see the preview of what could be the next Manning versus Brady matchup for many years to come. So, great win, Bengals fans. You know, feel so, get fat happy on success. We love it. This was exciting. I know I'm fat happy off of the success right now. But you know what? Let's move on to the Chargers. Pittsburgh is done. I'm glad we buried them. Big Ben should have probably retired at halftime. And I also made a joke by saying that he probably should have retired after the game, too, using a Bengals card that has a lot of media attention behind it so far, too. So let's get it, Houdet Nation. Let's go.
X's and O's with Sans.
All right, we're here with Sans. Sans, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Frank?
All right, my man. I'm doing so good after that win. What are your thoughts? How are you feeling about the season right now?
As a fan, I mean, that's one of the greatest wins we've had. We were talking about it just like kind of bored in the second half at least the fourth quarter because all the starters are pulled. And I'm not used to this, especially against the Steelers. It's the first time they beat the Steelers by more than 14 points since 1995. So, huge win. hopefully a changing of the guard between the two teams, or change of the tide, because this is kind of what the Steelers used to do to the Bengals, but now they got the roles reversed and they're finally taking it to them.
Yeah, man, I hope this continues. I hope that we continue to be the dominant team, and it's looking like that because of all of our young talent. And it looks like the Steelers are kind of hitting the wall. They're going to have quarterback issues. They have offensive line issues. There's quite a few things going on out there. So, Sam.
They've got a lot of questions going into the future. It seems like they kind of wanted to make one more run at the Super Bowl, but it doesn't look possible this year.
Oh, I agree. They're probably going to finish in fourth in the division. I mean, I say that because I really don't like the Steelers, but you know, if you look at the way they're playing compared to everyone else, it's realistic. I know the Browns have taken a little bit of a dive lately, and I think they're having similar issues because the Steelers with Roethlisberger, they can't do anything, and with Mayfield and all of his injuries, that's making that offense a little one-dimensional. How are you feeling about the division?
Yeah, and I know Lamar hasn't been playing well, but I still think he's a really good quarterback, or at least he's really good at football, whether you want to say that's at quarterback. I mean, he throws pretty well, and then his running is next level. They just have some issues to work through right now. So really, to me, the Bengals and the Ravens are the teams to beat in this division. But then you look, and the Bengals just can't beat the Browns right now. So hopefully that changes.
Yeah, I'm thinking when we go into that last game of the year, they'll be more one-dimensional like they have been, and we'll really be able to focus on stopping Chubb. I know Hunt's a little disgruntled. I think his father tweeted something negative. Sands, let's move on to the game specifically. From the first play, we were just running the ball so effectively. And, you know, that goes up and down. Sometimes we run the ball great. Sometimes, you know, we're kind of in the middle. What do you attribute this great rushing attack against the Steelers to?
Yeah, so I think a little bit of it is kind of hard to see, but the main change to me is both this week and last week, the wide zone play where you're going to have the offensive line try to move the defensive line horizontally, push them outward and let the running back find whether it's going to be inside, outside of the front side or all the way back to the backside C gap or wherever. He's going to try to find the hole, and Mixon excels at that. They were running this earlier, but they've added a little bit of jet motion. They've added, I think, I'm not positive on this, but I think they've changed how they want some of the doubles. Some of them are now quick stiff arms to set a guy up and let him seal rather than a true combo and then try to, like, a full shoulder wing and try to move up to the next level or even a full double team. They ran a little bit of crack toss earlier in the year, but now they're putting a fullback into the backfield running crack toss with a lead blocker. They're running it out of the shotgun. We saw an almost touchdown and another good game from that play. They found a way to effectively attack the edge of the defense, and then their staple run play wide zone has started to really start cooking. So when you get your staple play cooking and then you get these other plays moved off of it, when they start getting into different fronts to try to beat the wide zone, then you've got crack toss, you've got duo, all these other plays to go to. That's it's tough to stop. Also, I would say that teams aren't selling out to stop the run because a lot of teams are still shading safeties towards Ja'Marr Chase. So it's kind of a pick your poison there. And then obviously T also had the big game from the effect, the gravity that Chase has to pull in safeties from when they're playing single high or too high.
Do you think the running game success is going to continue against the upcoming opponents?
Yeah, so I remember we talked a few weeks ago, and I was like, I don't know, the Bengals haven't been running the ball well into these late boxes, so I think the Chargers might win this game. But now I'm feeling the opposite way because the Bengals are starting to run the ball really well, even into late boxes, heavy boxes, any boxes right now, from the second half of the Raiders game to now. I feel like it's definitely going to continue next week, and then the week after that is San Francisco, so that I think is a bigger challenge. The thing with the Chargers is that they like to play these late boxes. They've got Joey Bosa, but other than that, they don't really have a lot of front end talent. I think it continues next week. I would be surprised if, wouldn't say shocked, but I would be surprised if they struggle to run the ball next week.
And that'll be big against the Chargers. We'll keep the ball out of Herbert's hands. We'll keep Mixon, who's the hot hand, rolling. Sands, one last thing about the running game from this game. Normally, Cam Hayward gives us a lot of problems, and I know Hopkins went into the game a little banged up. How were we able to contain him? Did you notice anything there schematically?
Schematically, it wasn't anything that crazy. What we got was a lot of really good blocks on him. There was specifically in the run game, there was a play, Quentin Spain. Cam Hayward tries to stunt, move inside post-snap rather than just playing his gap normally. He's part of a stunt or maybe a blitz, and he cuts inside, and Spain turns his hips, seals him to the inside. And there's a big gain right off Cam Hayward. You're running right at him. Another play, Trey Hopkins, head up nose tackle of Cam Hayward. He's just able to reach and seal him. And what we got was just the interior of the offensive line blocking really well. So I wouldn't say it was anything crazy schematically. They weren't running away from him. They ran a little bit away from TJ, and that makes sense to me. But, yeah, they didn't stop that wide zone until they started the backside edge started leaving his boot containment responsibility and just sprinting down the line to make the stop. And that's when we got that big play to T that was almost a touchdown, fell down a yard short because everybody went to the running back and somebody tackled Joe Mixon even, and Burrow's running the opposite way, throwing a ball to T Higgins.
How do you think Adeniji's playing both in the run game and in pass protection?
I think he's been the best right guard we've had, I think. I think the coaching staff made a good call there. I know it's frustrating that your second-round pick is benched for last year's sixth-round pick, but when they're playing hot, it's more important to keep Burrow healthy and to get the run game going than it is to try to force Carmen's development. And I don't think Carmen was terrible. I do think that Adeniji has been playing better.
Hey, that's amazing. I guess you never know where you're going to get the guy. If the sixth rounder outplays the second rounder, just like you said, you go with whoever's going to protect Burrow and help Mixon move the ball. So let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. Both for this game, how are we able to contain the Steelers so well in the run game and the passing game? And for next game, you know, what do you foresee against that monster pass game that the Chargers have?
Yeah, so against the Raiders, I just think post-bye, because the bye week usually comes with your big adjustments. Going into the bye week, the Bengals were kind of lining up in what they were going to play and just trying to be better than the opponent. And that's when we saw Mike White have a big game. Baker Mayfield had a good game. And then post-bye week, they said, okay, we need to start disguising things a little bit more. We need to play some three safety sets. We'll flip guys around, will look like we're playing one thing, then play another coverage, those type of things. I think that the pass rush, the pressure package has been pretty good from Lou Anarumo this year. They're going to be tested against the Chargers. But the thing is that, why are the Chargers throwing so many short passes with Justin Herbert? It's almost counterintuitive that you want to actually you don't want to really play two safeties deep because they don't do that often, so you kind of want to roll one down to take away some of the underneath stuff. I think it'll be an interesting battle. I think Justin Herbert, while great quarterback, part of me wishes it's a primetime game, part of me is glad it's 1 o'clock so that the Chargers have to play at 10 a.m. their time, because I think this will be a good one. Justin Herbert's still a young quarterback. Even though he's really good, he's still susceptible to some of those late rotations, post-snap rotation, things like that, just different disguises, pressures, all the stuff that Lou Anarumo has started to pick up a little bit since the bye. That's something that all these young quarterbacks are a little susceptible to.
Well, excellent stuff, Sans. You know, I feel that Burrow is better than Herbert, but maybe I'm biased. Do you have any, before we part ways, do you have any words on that matchup, or is it just too early to tell?
I mean, it's too early. I think that this year Burrow definitely has a case as being the better player, but I mean, last year Herbert did have a good case to be the better player. They're tight, and I think when you look at the rookie quarterbacks in this class, you can kind of appreciate the two of them, that they came on so strong. I think both these players were similar in their careers as well, but Burrow always reminded me of Tony Romo, and Justin Herbert reminded me a little bit of Carson Palmer. So I was like, whoever you want, they're both really, really good players, both all-pro level quarterbacks. I just think they play differently. If I had to choose, I guess I'd pick Burrow. I mean, he's my guy.
Yeah, I have big things in mind for him for the future, so I hope it all pans out that way. Sans, excellent segment. How do people find you on social media?
You can find me at Bengals_Sans on Twitter.
Week 13 preview. Cincinnati Bengals versus Los Angeles Chargers.
First play. Mixon off tackle left. We'll run away from Bosa. We're going to go right after that defense. We're going to seal off the defensive end. We're going to push him out of the play. Mixon's going to hit a hole and gain 4, 5, 6 yards on that play. Second play, same thing. Power to the left side. Boom. Let's go. Stop him. We're going to go right at you again. The Chargers have a weak rush defense. Mixon's hot right now. We're going to go with our strength versus your weakness until you stop it. Third play, now we're going to pitch it to the right. We're not even going to put the ball in the air for the first few plays. We're going to see if you can stop the run. And if you show you can't, we're going to control the clock and we're going to control the game. So that third down play, or that third play, whatever, hopefully there's a first down by then, that's a pitch to Mixon on the right. Yeah, we're going on Bosa's side. We're going to let him get a little aggressive, maybe blow the edge on that, and there's Mixon right around the corner, some wide receiver blocks downfield, and that's just going to set the tone for the whole day, especially we get those first 3, 4, 5 plays going, and Mixon just rolls over and we get past midfield. That's going to really set the tone. All right, so some offensive strategy for this game. I say you find the one-on-ones in that defense. They have a lot of DBs that are hurt. Derwin James is outstanding, so you want to stay away from him in double coverage. He's going to be all over the field. You kind of want to find where he is, kind of want to find where Bosa is, and hit those one-on-one matchups. And how do you do that? You do it with 4 wide receivers. You do it with 5 wide receivers. But you don't want to go crazy and just go 4 and 5 wides all game. You want to go 3 wides with the tight end, so you keep mixing churning too. And then take some deep shots. You know, find which side Derwin James is cheating towards. You want to cheat towards Chase, then we're going to be looking for Higgins up top. You want to play middle of the field, then we're going to send someone at you in the middle of the field, and hopefully we have Chase or Higgins on the outside. Just a lot of possibilities there. Concerns, as I said, Derwin James. He's got versatility. He blitzes. He covers. He gets turnovers. He has a lot of range out there, so that's someone that you have to be aware of on every down. And, you know, I interviewed Billy Price last season, and he said that's the first thing he does when he comes to the line is just sees where the safeties are lined up. So that's going to be big, whether it's Hopkins or Trey Hill calling it. But they're going to get to the line and say, there's number 33, and, you know, we're going to find a way to kind of stay away from him. And then Joey Bosa, he has all the ability of a TJ Watt. I don't want to say it, but yeah. Myles Garrett, I hate giving these guys compliments, but he's just like those two, just as deadly. I think he's better than his brother, and I think if you get him going, you know, he could do some real damage in there. So we're going to have to keep him off of Joe Burrow. Defensive strategy, we have to watch Eckler in the flat, and we have to make our tackles. They're going to be watching tape on the Browns game and on the Jets game because Eckler is a really dynamic back out of the backfield. And that's what I would be doing. I would be like, let's get him the ball in space and make those linebackers have to come up and tackle him. And, you know, that could be a very big part of the game for them, something that we have to be very aware of. We have to scheme up, as I always say. We have to watch tape on what they like to do with Eckler. And then on top of all the preparation, it's really going to come down to when you're out in the field and he's got the ball, make sure he doesn't get past you. You know, don't dive at him and go to the ground and miss your chance at a tackle. You know, no arm tackles. No, I'm going to hit you as hard as I can in the upper body, and because I'm so strong, you're going to fall down. No, that's not going to work with this guy. So we have to be very careful not to let Eckler light us up coming out of that flat. And then you can't lose contain on Herbert. He can run. He's got that deadly arm, so we're going to be definitely fearful of that. We're going to have to, I don't know if single high is the way to go against these guys with his ability to throw the ball deep. So with that said, there's going to be some more running lanes if Herbert takes off. So the defensive ends have to be disciplined. The linebackers have to be spying him because he can hurt you more with his legs than you think. And then go to the confusing looks and pressures. You know, nothing vanilla, not come to the line and Herbert can just be like, oh, I got this. This is where I'm going. Mix it up, shifts, blitzing from different spots, dropping guys out of blitzes, just a whole, you know, almost treat him like a rookie quarterback and attempt to confuse him and get in his head, because you can't just let him take 7 steps back and heave the ball downfield because he will do some damage. Defensive concerns, Eckler, as I said, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, even Guyton, the third down receiver. You know, Herbert can find all those guys so they can all do their damage. Hopefully Awuzie locks down one of them. Hopefully we get the double coverage on some deep balls and we don't make them that much of a factor. Cook's a decent tight end. Herbert, with that arm strength, got to watch that. When they went into that shootout against the Steelers, it was just like, oh, the Steelers scored. And when Herbert had the ball, I'm like, well, they're going to score, no problem. And he just delivered every time. So you can't sleep on this guy's arm or his mobility. And they have a pretty sound offensive line. They did kind of what I wanted to do. They have three new starters, a high draft pick and two free agent pickups that are playing well. So they revamped that offensive line, and it's helping them. So that's another strength of theirs and another area where we need to be concerned. Prediction? Shootout. We're going to score. They're going to score. We're going to score. They're going to score. It's just going to go back and forth. Even though our defense is great, maybe we make them one-dimensional and they don't score as much as I think. But let's just say this. Five touchdowns for the Bengals of all sorts. Two big McPherson field goals. And Herbert does his damage. Maybe Eckler gets this a couple times and they score their five touchdowns. One field goal. A little questionable kicking even with Dustin Hopkins. 41-38 Bengals. Good night, Chargers. 8-4. Ravens, you better win, or if not, we're catching you. And if you stay a game ahead of us, then we'll just catch you when we play you.
The unofficial Bengals podcast would like to welcome Alex Finelli.
All right, once or twice a year, we bring this next guest on because he's just so electric, so much fun to listen to. He happens to be a very knowledgeable football fan who's also a very big Chargers fan. I'd like to welcome in Alex Finelli. Alex, how are you today?
Frank, thank you for that introduction. I like the use of the word electric, and I'm doing well today, man. How are you?
Doing all right. It's good to see the Bengals have a big win. And what I wanted to get to is, why do you think the Chargers are going to beat the Bengals this week?
So, actually, I think the loss might bode well for us in the sense that we are going to play with a heightened sense of urgency, especially because this is going to have a playoff feel heading into it. I mean, it's the first game of December, and the Bengals are a formidable opponent, dude. So this is not going to be the 16-13 game that it was last year. The Chargers are going to have to put up a lot of points. Now, Herbert, I have faith in him. You know, I think that Herbert can do a lot of damage if given the ball with the amount of possessions that he can get. My concern is how many possessions will he have? Teams have been able to kind of key in on our league worst ranked run defense, and that has been a kryptonite for the Chargers as they're kind of stumbling. 4-1 team now looking at 6-5, but still the 7th seed in the playoffs by virtue of the expanded format, but they really got to kick it into high gear. So hopefully they're revved up for this one. And the Bengals got a potent offense. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase is having the breakout rookie year. He's found this connection with his college quarterback, Burrow. But I think the Joe that they got to key in on in the Cincinnati offense is Mixon. I mean, he's a top three running back in the league right now, both third in rushing yards and rushing touchdowns. And the Chargers are allowing 145 rushing yards a game. Coming off of a performance where Mixon just ran for 165 and I believe two scores against Pittsburgh in a dominant win, I mean, he needs to be the focal point of the game plan now. So they got to just stack the box. And look, if Burrow has a good game, 350-plus, couple of scores, and he beats us, all right. But we cannot allow our franchise quarterback to spend the majority of the game on the sideline. So we have to really just emphasize rush defense. And, you know, honestly, if there's a particular player, Derwin James missed the game last year. He missed all of 2020 with an injury. He'll be an impact player in the secondary. I would look for him as an X factor. I mean, they're going to have guys that are going to command double coverage, specifically Chase. But Derwin James, he does play with a lot of liberty, so if he could blitz, create some pressure. He did have an interception last week. So look for him to kind of be the guy to lead the Chargers defense in a game where they much need it.
You know, when we look at the Chargers as outsiders, I see Bosa, I see Derwin James. Who else on defense do you feel for the Chargers has a chance to make an impact in this game?
You know, so it's going to have to be Justin Jones. He's a young player. He plays defensive line, and a lot of his game is in run stoppage. So if he can dominate this middle of the line, I see that the Bengals have a couple interior linemen out, a center's out, a guard is out. So if he can have an impact performance, make some splash plays, you know, stop some dives up the middle, especially in some important scenarios like, you know, 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1 in our territory, and they're going to go for it in an I formation or a strong run or something like that. I mean, he's going to need to have a real big game to step up. They need somebody who can really stuff the interior line. I don't think Linval Joseph, who's usually our interior guy, is playing this week. So if the young kid who has promise, if he can step up, I mean, that would be definitely a big plus for the Chargers. But, I mean, yeah, those guys you alluded to earlier, Bosa, Derwin James, they're all pros. They got to play like that this Sunday.
What about at the corner position? I know, obviously, you guys are going to stack up and probably hold Jamar Chase, you know, if Derwin James plays as usual. Do you feel that your team has an adequate answer to Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins?
You know, honestly, dude, the Bengals got a real good offense. They can score points on anybody, really. And our secondary is dinged up. Asante Samuel, who's the starter, is out. Gilman, who's been seeing time at the safety position opposite of James, he's out. They got a bunch of reserve guys coming in, and those guys have not stepped up to the plate. I mean, they are showing why they haven't been seeing much playing time with other guys healthy. That's why I do think they should just gear it towards stopping the run defense, because I think Burrow's going to get his anyway. So, you know, if you could at least neutralize what Mixon can do on the ground and make them a one-dimensional offense, that's what you'd have to do. I think Chase is going to be a mismatch for anybody in our secondary, honestly. You know, maybe they will just assign Derwin as secondary coverage, but it's going to be hard having practice squad guys go up against guys the likes of Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. So, honestly, if I'm a betting man, I think Cincinnati's passing offense could have a good game. Ideally, they would want to run it just to kind of control that time of possession. Really, I'd rather try to stop Mixon than Burrow, preferably.
Yeah, Mixon's on a roll these days. And, you know, from what you said, this game has all the makings of a big shootout. And now when we go to your offense, Eckler's having a great year. Obviously, Williams and Keenan Allen are superstars. Herbert, phenomenal quarterback. How do you think the Chargers are going to try to attack this Bengals defense?
Big plays over the top. Mike Williams has been very hit or miss this year, but when he's on, I mean, he is really on, and the Chargers benefit from that greatly. So if they could either, you know, if they like a favorable man coverage, or they just design a play where he could get open deep in the secondary, I mean, that could definitely make the impact for the game in our favor. Keenan Allen's been on a tear lately. I mean, he'll get you a lot of receptions. He'll get you a lot of yards. So if his productivity keeps up, along with Eckler being a threat in the receiving game, this could be a big passing day for Herbert. Hopefully it's able to translate into a win. Like I said, I would ideally prefer the shootout between the two sophomore quarterbacks as opposed to Herbert against Cincinnati's rush offense, really just doing a number on the Chargers' run defense. So I would prefer that, and I really think they're going to come out with a lot of big passing plays. Ideally, they would like to establish a run, but that's not really how our offense kind of generates their yards. So I'm expecting a big game from Herbert. And what I liked about Herbert is big game, big pressure. I trust him. He's cool. He's calm. He's collected. He's a good leader.
Yeah, and that's a lot of Burrow's MO too. Him and Herbert don't seem to get rattled in big situations. And they both seem like when it counts, they can move the ball down the field effectively, especially in the fourth quarter. One thing I wanted to compliment you guys on was what you did to your offensive line in the offseason. I think that both of us were kind of in the same boat where we had some weaknesses there. You added that phenomenal rookie tackle, Slater, and I think you had another one or two free agent signings. You really did justice for your line. How have they been playing so far, in your opinion?
Excellent. I mean, that left side of the line, you got Slater at tackle, you had Feeler at guard, and you got Lindsley at center. They've been playing excellent. Feeler is going to be out, so they're going to have some reserve guys kind of step in and play up. We got Oboshi, who was a free agent signing from Detroit. He was playing well, but he's out for the year. So that right side of the line is a little shaky. But I got to say, the left side of the line is really, really – if they could – I don't know where Hendrickson lines up, but he's obviously a big threat in the passing game. If they could get him on Slater and neutralize him so Herbert can sit comfortably in the pocket, I mean, that would be great.
Yeah, and Hendrickson will be lining up over Slater, I would say, probably 90-95% of the time. That is his side.
I'll definitely take that matchup then.
All right, on to the big question. And I know your answer, but it's still fun to hear your opinion on it. Burrow versus Herbert, and who's better and why?
All right, well, let me just preface this by saying Cincinnati and Los Angeles hit two home runs in the 2020 draft. I mean, you're looking for franchise quarterbacks when you're selecting quarterbacks that high, and they got them. But I do think Herbert is the slightly better of the two. I just like him more from a physical standpoint, to be honest with you. He's bigger. He's taller. He seems to be more mobile, too. I mean, what he's able to do in the run game is pretty impressive, especially for somebody with an arm like him. I think he just has a stronger arm as well. I mean, he could really launch it, and it looks very effortless in doing so. But once again, if I'm Cincinnati, hypothetically, do you take Justin Herbert with the number one overall pick if given a reselection? Yeah, I mean, you could definitely justify that, but do you regret taking Burrow by any means? Absolutely not. I mean, Joe Burrow is a great quarterback for this organization. I like his poise. I like his charisma. He's much of a leader. He's tough. He's a little tough to a fault, I think, just because I don't know if Cincinnati is really going to be able to protect him all that well. Like, I do think they really need to emphasize, hey, this is our guy. Let's make sure he's upright the entire year. But, I mean, both quarterbacks are excellent, man. So kudos to your team. Kudos to my team. And it should definitely be a very fun game on Sunday.
100%. And I have a lot of respect for your organization and for Herbert as well. The way I always answer that argument is I think that Herbert has a better arm, and I just think that Burrow's more of a winner. You know, the jury's still out on all of that, but, you know, that's my side. You have your side. And
oh, jury's definitely still out, but it's going to be very fun to watch over the years.
Oh, man, I hope that we're both in the playoffs battling for years to come. Alex, as always, man, it was a pleasure having you on the show, my friend.
Thank you very much, Frank. Podcast is great, man. I'm really excited, and hopefully the Bulls can get a W.
McLeavy Minute.
First off, the University of Cincinnati is going to lose their football coach. Does not look great. You know, just when the city of Cincinnati's riding high with the Bengals and the Bearcats on top of the football landscape, and there's a rug to be pulled from underneath, and it's the Bearcats this time that with Kelly going to LSU, that leaves the opening for Notre Dame. We'll want Fickell, and I'm sure Fickell would want Notre Dame. His news conference on Tuesday, he didn't put any fires out by his answers. So, unfortunately, hopefully they can win Saturday against Houston and get into the college football playoffs. But I have a strong suspicion that, first off, the game against the Houston Cougars is going to be a tough one. It's going to be a close one. Houston's very good, but I think they're going to the Bearcats win. Well, first off, if they lose, they're out of the college football playoffs. Notre Dame will get to interview Fickell. My second scenario is if the college football playoff committee knows that Notre Dame wants Fickell, the college football committee will keep Cincinnati out of the playoffs. If the game's tight, that gives them the excuse that if Oklahoma State plays good in the Big 12 conference championship, they will flip-flop with Cincinnati. And they will give Notre Dame a chance to hire their coach. As Cincinnati fans, we love our teams, but we always get screwed at the end. And that's my feeling on the Bearcats. And to the Bengals, how can't you not enjoy what you're watching? These last two games that they played against the Raiders and the Steelers is pretty much old school Bengal football with running the ball first and playmakers on the outside. And Joe Burrow not having to carry the team for a second week, we all know that he's ready to roll when needed. So, I mean, hats off to this team. Hats off to the coaching staff and how they're doing on their game plans. And, you know, knock on wood, thank God we're not getting injured. Seriously, that holds up. I feel good going into this weekend against the Chargers. And for the coming weeks, I feel Cincinnati is in the driver's seat to win the AFC North.
AFC North standings.
The Bengals are currently 7-4 and in second place in the AFC North. They trail the 8-3 Ravens by one game, and they lead the 6-6 Browns and the 5-5-1 Steelers. The Bengals are currently the fifth seed in the AFC. That'll do it for this episode. Next episode is going to be a review of the Chargers game and a preview of the upcoming game against the rival 49ers from those two Super Bowl appearances. Let's get some payback. We're also going to welcome in some special guests as well. I'd like to thank @BengalsHighlights on Instagram, the best page out there. Really cool highlights, really cool music, definitely something you should check out. Thank you for listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca, and I'm a Bengals fan for life.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.